Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and I've got a question for you. Have you ever made Abelskivers? I'm sure you have at one point or another in your life. Just kidding. I have it. It's a Danish pastry, and we're going to learn more about it with our guest today, Paul Novak. He is an expert baker, baking instructor at Madison College, and he's the author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. And on Paul's list of delicious treats to talk about today, we have pancakes, waffles, lefse, French toast, and popovers. And maybe you have a favorite recipe for one of those. What would you like to know about making them? Join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Paul Novak with us by phone this time around. Paul?
Hi, Larry.
Ah, it's great to hear your voice.
You'll just have to imagine the smell of the bread I often bring.
I know. I was talking with some folks here before the show, and I was saying, I'm really sorry he's not going to be with us today because he always brings some baked bread.
Yeah, well, let's shoot for Easter then.
All right, we'll shoot for Easter. And Nigel O'Shea and I and Jill Nadeau will all be a lot happier. But let's talk about Abelskiver. Did I pronounce that right?
I'm not sure because it's Danish. I've just said Abelskivers. Yeah, you have to look up the spelling of it. It's really a variation on a pancake. It requires a special pan, sort of half of a sphere. And they're almost reminiscent of popovers because you put the dough in and then you turn it gradually so you get a ball shape, but inside it's almost steamed like a popover. So they're quite interesting to do, but the batter is essentially a pancake or waffle batter.
I have got, as you're listening in, if you've ever made an, how do you pronounce it? How do you pronounce it?
I say Abelskivers.
Abelskivers. If you've ever made those, give us a call and tell us more about them at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Now, that's a special pan. Are they available?
Yes. A lot of griddles, the old-fashioned ones, would have been cast iron. So I have a cast iron Abelskiver pan, and I assume they still make them. My popover pan is also cast iron, so that's been the traditional thing for a lot of this. On the other hand, a lefse pan tends to be nowadays electric, and I'm not sure what it's made out of, because you don't use any shortening on that. There's even in griddles, there's different griddles and how you approach it and what's your recipe, et cetera.
Well, it's pretty cool. You mentioned griddles, and more than 25 years ago, I got as a gift from Jim Packard, rest his soul, and his wife, Deb, a griddle, and it's an electric one, and it makes the best darn pancakes. There's a setting, it just says pancakes.
I don't even know
what the temperature is. But you turn it to that setting, and it makes it does away with the problems of getting the right amount of heat.
Yes, everybody's going to have to figure out their griddle, and is it electric, is it gas, is it aluminum, is it cast iron? But once you figure it out, then you go from there.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. David in Green Bay has a comment for us. David, hello.
Hey, Larry, how's it going?
Good, appreciate the call. You're an Abelskiver guy?
Yes, I'm originally from Sioux City, Iowa, and my church, for like a cultural fair, we would make Abelskivers.
So it is Abelskivers, okay.
Okay.
Yes, that's how we pronounced it. We would do the first bottom half and then put some like applesauce in the center and then do the little turn to make it into a ball shape and then cover that in like brown sugar.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and because there is that opening in the inside, it does make sense to put something in there. But it would take skill to know how much to put in. You know, I would guess it's like a half a teaspoon, you know, small amount.
Yeah, small amount. So were they must have been very popular, David.
Oh, yeah, super delicious. Everybody loved them.
But they do take time to make because you have to turn them. And so that's a skill.
Yeah, but if you're doing it for a large congregation or whatever, you probably get pretty good at it.
Oh, yes. You definitely get good with practice.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. I want to give Mary makes them as well, I believe, in Milwaukee. Mary, hi.
Hi. Yes, I'm from Milwaukee, and here we say it Eboskier. So I don't know if that's accurate, but I got the recipe from a great-grandma that lived in Gresham, Wisconsin. And I make them as a tradition every Christmas morning. And they are a challenge to make because you got to – first, I put a little – I have the old iron – my great-grandma's Eboskier pan, the old iron one. And I put a little bit of, like, a vegetable oil in each little half circle. And then I pour, like, up to half – I pour batter into, like, half of the circle. You let it cook for a little bit till you see some bubbles. And then comes the great technique. You've got to kind of flip it, and I push down with a fork, and then I take a knife on the other side. So it's actually two hands because when you flip it, you want the other edge to get tucked in right away so that it forms a nice ball and doesn't have a big ridge on the end where the dough comes out, because otherwise the dough will come out where you flip it. So you got to go fast, and you've got to kind of tuck it in right away. But I love them. They're the cutest little thing, and they do take a long time, so I only do it on Christmas morning.
Now, do you put anything on them, like powdered sugar or something? Or?
Well, we just do we're pure maple syrup people, but honestly, they're light. Like the gentleman said, they're like a popover.
Yeah.
Even though it is like a pancake batter, they don't have that texture. They have like a lightness, like some little air bubbles in that. So honestly, I think it would be good with some good jam or, like you said, powdered sugar or even maybe chocolate because I love chocolate. But mainly I do maple syrup. But we make a lot of them because everybody gobbles them up. So I really should be nicer and make them more through the year. But they're so hard to make.
I don't blame you, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, and I just use butter with them. I mean, that's... To me, that's all they need. But the turning, that is the process. And some people turn them just once, but you can do it in increments. But you can't put the batter, you can't put too much batter in, you can't put in too little. You got to be careful, especially if you're using cast iron, that you don't wait too long to turn it. So yes, it's a skill, and you would get good at it, but it takes a lot of attention also.
Mary... Good for you.
Yeah, so I congratulate everybody who's making it for other people because it's a labor of love, no question.
No question about it. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call. Well, Rick in Rhinelander has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I, too, have made Eboskievers, and I use chopsticks to turn them. That works really well. Once they get going, you can flip them with the chopsticks. But my question for the professor is in regard to popovers. My wife makes wonderful popovers, but occasionally we have a failure, and we've tried different ways of doing them. And when I say failure, it means they don't rise. The steaming doesn't cause them to pop at that big hollow center, so they become more like a Yorkshire pudding. They're more dense. And ultimately, she now uses the Pyrex dishes, but we've tried it with tin muffin pans and what have you. I was just wondering whether you have one particular thing that perhaps we should do, whether it's putting the batter in the refrigerator the night before she does that, off times now, or something in particular that we're missing to have this kind of inconsistent result.
Well, realize popovers do not have any leavening, so it's really a chemical reaction, and a lot of it is with the egg, which means it's related to soufflés. And the story about soufflés is they can fall. So they are a bit delicate. I think that what works for me is that I use a cast iron pan, and I preheat it. So you're putting it into a very hot pan, and you put it in the oven, and you don't touch it, and then you bring them out. And all I can say is it's never going to be 100%. Does that make sense? Because it's a chemical reaction, there are always going to be ones that don't work. Is it a problem with the eggs not being fresh enough? I don't know. So just play with it, and you know, maybe you can get to be 80-90% successful, but I don't think you'll ever be 100%.
So you need fresh eggs for this, you're saying?
I'm saying it's, you know, you probably have good quality, because that's the main ingredient, really, that and flour, because in a little sugar, there's no baking powder, baking soda, or yeast. It's a chemical reaction.
Rick, do you preheat your pan?
I don't believe she does. What she does do, though, is this is her department, and unfortunately she's not here right now, but she puts the batter in the refrigerator overnight, and then I believe she fills just regular Pyrex dishes now, because we've tried muffin tins and that didn't work. But preheating it makes a lot of sense, because I think there's sort of a steaming, in addition to the chemical reaction, I think it's sort of a steaming action, too, I would think. Isn't that right, Professor, that causes that cavity?
So depending on your pans, for some people, almost have to preheat cast iron because it takes so long to heat up. Somebody's using aluminum muffin pans, that's going to be, to me, a little more problematic, because preheating them is not going to, you know, do much. But it's also not looking, not ever opening the oven.
Yeah. Which is...
So you got to have a glass door on your oven so you can peek, but not open it up.
Yeah, I understand completely. Rick, give that preheating a try and see what happens. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, a lot of baking or griddle work is experimentation, because it depends on your griddle. It depends on your recipe, you know, so forth and so on.
And thanks again. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Rachel, our Central Time producer, studied in Denmark, and she remembers them being pronounced in Denmark as Ebbelskeevers.
Okay.
So I guess, you know, if that's the way they pronounce it in Denmark, I guess probably that's the way we ought to pronounce it here.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Steve emailed that his wife has made stuffing waffles and mashed potatoes. So he makes the stuffing, shred chicken or turkey into the mix, and tosses it into a waffle iron. So these are stuffing waffles. He makes garlic mashed potatoes, get some gravy hot, throw the waffle down on a plate, scoop on mashed potatoes on top of that, gravy on top of that, and it's amazing. One time she made some Yorkshire pudding to go with it, spoon some stuffing, potatoes, and gravy in the center, equally delicious.
And realize a Yorkshire pudding is essentially a popover. It's really the same, almost the same recipe. And it's the same process, though it's much bigger, and you usually put things in it. But it's, you know, in another sense, it's just a big popover.
Paul Novak, our guest today, baking instructor at Madison College, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. So what are you baking and griddling these days? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all things on the griddle with our guest today, Paul Novak. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining in. Questions for him? As we talk baking and griddling, call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. What's your favorite kind of pancake? Jill likes really thin ones. I like ones that rise up a bit.
I'm gonna have a hard time saying a favorite. What I wanted to mention is I'm glad you talked about potatoes, because we've in the past talked about lefse, which is essentially a potato pancake done without any shortening. But potato pancakes, you know, latkes, all that, often done with raw potatoes. But there's a really good recipe, a boxty, which uses both raw potato and cooked potato. And it's really quite a marvelous potato pancake. And I just this weekend made potato bread, which is one of my favorite breads, sourdough potato bread. So potatoes and pancakes, all kinds of different ways to do it. But in terms of basic pancakes, just realize some use yeast, some use baking powder, some are sourdough. Some are just buttermilk and soda as a leavening. And Swedish pancakes, some of them have no leavening, very thin.
Yeah.
And I like apples in them. So I suppose my favorite would be buttermilk blueberry pancakes.
Well, that's high on my list, although sometimes, depending on the season, I will use blueberries sometimes. I've used apples. I love strawberries, though, when you've got fresh strawberries.
Sure, yeah.
Put them in the pancakes. What's the flour that you prefer, or is just a pancake?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned it. I'm sort of a stickler about this. I suggest everybody out there make your pancakes with pastry flour. It's a different flour. It's soft wheat, not hard wheat. You don't need gluten in pancakes. You don't want to develop it. And soft wheat has a better taste. So this was the traditional way to make pancakes, was pastry flour, what you'd use for pie dough. And it's easy to get the white pastry flour. So that and try it, and hopefully you will taste the way pancakes once tasted, you know, if you're old enough, long time ago.
Well, the other thing I like in pancakes, by the way, are cranberries, which I love. I just have always, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I always have some cranberries in the freezer. I pull a handful out, smash them a bit, and throw them in with the, once the pancakes start to bubble a little bit, then I throw them on the pancakes.
And one technique that people should play with is when you make your pancakes, how much shortening do you use on the pan? Because you'll get if you don't put any on, you will get a different coloring than if you put shortening on your pan, on your griddle. So it's something to play with, you know, or sometimes even just, you know, a spray shortening like Pam gives you a tiny bit, or other times use a lot of butter or oil. So that's a whole nother variable. Do you make them dry, or do you put some shortening on in between batches?
And I've got some oils that are infused with like mango and things like that. That's kind of fun, too.
Yeah, and of course we haven't even talked about waffles. Do you like old-fashioned waffles or Belgian waffles that are deeper? I mean, I have an electric one, and then I have another one you can flip, but I have a cast-iron Belgian waffle pan that you then flip at some point. And my advice with waffles is use your same pancake recipe, but separate the eggs and beat the whites, and then you get a fluffier concoction to put in your pan. That's the typical advice for waffles. You know, use a pancake recipe, but put in the yolks and whip the whites and get a frothier mixture.
That's a good idea.
And typically you put a little extra oil in, too.
Jim in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I have a question about Spritz cookies.
Okay.
I've never really learned how to make them properly because I can't seem to get them out of the press. And I was wondering if you have any advice about how to make Spritz cookies.
What kind of cookies are these now?
Spritz.
I do not know what those are.
Okay.
I don't know how to make everything. Somebody called me a professor.
There's probably another name.
Not really. Yes.
There's probably another name for Spritz cookies. What do they look like?
Well, some people make them like in wreaths, and they usually color them green or red or white or something like that. And then they also there's almond, and some people may put a little vanilla in them too.
So it sounds like a kind of a standard Christmas cookie.
Well, sort of. Yet it's not like a sugar cookie. It's a little bit different.
Hmm.
Okay.
It's a German cookie, and my grandma used to make them, and so I'm trying to figure out how I can make them now.
Yeah, I've eaten a lot of Scandinavian cookies, you know, krumkaka, and I don't even remember the names, and some of them need these special pans, or you roll it out in, you know, whatever the kind in that looks coiled. All I can say is you find somebody who knows how to do them and you apprentice yourself. My point is there are so many specialized Christmas cookies from different cultures that often need special pans or techniques. And the people who do them every year clearly, have skills to pass on.
Yeah. Well, Jill Nadeau is whispering in my ear and saying, Spritz cookies need a cookie press.
And that's going to be a lot of what cookies are. Again, a special device. Some put an imprint into it, create a shape, so.
Well, that's as far as we can go, Jim. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dave and Toma, thank you for calling.
Well, I've just got a simple one for you. My dad was a simple cook, and that's how I am. The less ingredients, the better. And going back to your pancakes, there's something that I love to make for people, and they always turn their nose up at it. But after they try it, they always think 100% of people who ever try it like it. That's just take regular pancake mix and throw in a can of whole kernel corn. And it sounds like it doesn't belong there, but if they make the best pancakes, corn has a different flavor once it's in the pancakes.
Huh. Have you ever heard of that, Paul?
Well, people, you talked about putting cranberries in.
Yeah.
In a sense, whatever you like, whatever you work, what works for you, you'd have to probably drain the corn pretty well, correct?
Right.
So each ingredient you put in, like there are potato pancakes that would use sweet potatoes, and that would give you a whole different potato. But you'd have to learn how to work with sweet potato compared to potato. So putting corn in, good idea.
Not a bad idea. Dave, thank you. Appreciate the call. By the way, back to Spritz cookies for a minute. I think Jill also mentions that the dough can't be too soft, and the pan must be cool. So there you go.
And getting back to griddles, realize English muffins are done on a griddle. Most people buy them. If you try to make your own, what I'll say is good luck. meaning, this is why most people buy them. Like bagels. Bagels you have to boil and then bake. You know, that's time consuming. If I can give my opinion about French toast.
Yes.
It's called French toast because it's pain perdu from France, which means lost bread. Meaning French toast is meant to use stale bread, lost bread, which soaks up the egg and the milk. So people use fresh bread or use really sweet bread. I find a problem with that. meaning some recipes would have you take your bread, you could use a baguette, and let it sit out and purposely stale it a bit so it soaks up more of the fluid. And again, historically, it was a way to use, you know, not waste.
Yeah.
So when people use, you know, fancy bread, you know, fresh bread, the texture to me is wrong. You know, it's not right. So I'm a traditionalist in that regard.
Paul Novak, our guest, join in at 800-642-1234. We've got, see, Mary and Barb. Let's go to Mary, I think, is in line next in Sugar Island. Hi, Mary.
Hi. We have a favorite pancake, and my daughter has made it for her little one in Virginia, and she loves it. It's a hearty pancake with whole wheat flour, white, and a little bit of white flour, farina, and then you use applesauce in it, and so on. And it's we just love it. It's one of our favorite ones.
Do you mix the applesauce right in with the batter to begin with?
Well, what I do is I put the dry ingredients separately, the wheat flour and the white flour and the farina, and then I guess a little bit of sugar, and then I take the and baking soda and powder. I take the milk and the applesauce and the egg and mix that together, and then I blend it into the dry ingredients. And then when it's in my hot skillet, then I drop little bits of chopped walnut and then craisins on it and so on. But anyway, when my daughter started out, her little one couldn't have walnuts and that, so she just made plain ones. But it's Maddie's favorite pancakes.
That sounds good to me. What do you think, Paul?
Well, apples is a great thing to put into pancakes, and this was using applesauce. I'd be more inclined to grate apple in, you know, analogous to grated potato in a potato pancake. But applesauce is a whole nother way to go. And if I can throw out an idea for people, you don't always have to use wheat flour. I mean, some people use buckwheat. I find that strong tasting, but sorghum flour makes just wonderful pancakes. There's a sweetness to sorghum flour. So it's going to be a whole grain, but not so heavy as a whole wheat. It's just an idea for people, and it's a Wisconsin crop. Sorghum flour and also, of course, sorghum syrup.
Yeah, there we go. Mary, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. Barb in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I wonder if your guest could offer some suggestions. It's funny, when I had the radio on, I was actually cooking buckwheat pumpkin pancakes on the griddle when the program started.
Ooh.
But I have severe wheat allergy, also dairy and eggs. So I'm basically making these, I throw in a half a can of pumpkin, a cup of buckwheat, then I add the little leavenings, and I put olive oil in this time, but they stuck pretty bad. And so I put the second batch, I put canola oil on the griddle, and that worked better. But I was just, and they actually turn out, but you really have to kind of pry them off the griddle. I don't have a set recipe because I keep trying different things. I wonder if your guest can give me some suggestions. The sorghum flour would be something I would try, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Barb, thank you.
Well, for some people, vegetable oil works fine. Now, I would be apt to use butter, but that's a dairy product. If you don't mind, lard is a traditional oil for not just pie crust, but would also be used for pancakes. And hope this doesn't offend people, but if you like bacon, if you have a good bacon, the traditional thing would be to save the bacon fat and use that as what you would put into your griddle. But in terms of flours, oat flour makes good pancakes. I mentioned sorghum, millet flour, and you can try the others, amaranth, and you know, and on and on and on. But sorghum is wonderful, oat is wonderful, barley is a little bit, you know, bland. So you can play with all the non-wheat flours, you know, rice is bland, you know, especially compared to oat. But that's a whole nother way to go.
Well, what this whole business about egg being not having eggs in the pancake mix, it's...
Yes, that's going to change it. But realize a lefse doesn't have eggs, you know.
Yeah.
That's potato and cream and a little flour. So, yeah, you don't... Some recipes have a huge amount of egg, but others don't have any. And the French toast, of course, you know, whatever bread you used, there's egg in the batter, but, you know, I suppose you could try eliminating it. Yeah, it's hard to get away, you know, do without egg. But then you go for, you know, enhance the other ingredients.
Yeah, it is. And eggs, really, you think about eggs, what, if you can eat them, what an inexpensive food product there. You know, I look at what we pay for a dozen or two eggs in the store these days, and, you know, you figure out the cost per serving is pretty darn cheap.
Yes. Yeah, and even if you get good, you know, good quality local eggs, you know, you're going to pay more, but it's still not very much considering the protein and the, you know, that's in them also. So,
well, Grace in Bayfield, it's your turn now. Grace, hi.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When I heard you were talking about pancakes, I had to call. A couple of years ago, when my mother moved up to live with me, and I learned she was gluten intolerant, we were listening to the radio about Rosa Parks, and there was a recipe for Rosa Parks' pancakes with peanut butter in them. And, of course, we had to do gluten-free, so we experimented with all those lovely flours that your guest has been talking about. But that's our favorite pancake now is about a couple tablespoons of peanut butter in the pancake batter. And, boy, they're hearty. They stay with you, and they taste delicious. And if you want the recipe itself, I'm sure you can Google Rosa Parks' peanut butter pancakes. But I don't have the original recipe anymore because I had to modify it so much to make it gluten-free.
Wow.
See, and that would give protein. That would give a little heft to the pancakes. Yeah, that makes a lot of, you know, that makes a lot of sense, too. So in another sense, what a lot of the callers have mentioned is there's not a lot you can't put in a pancake.
That's right. I'm going to look that Rosa Parks one up. Yeah. Daughter Emily loves peanut butter.
And getting back to applesauce and a lot of my breads, I use applesauce instead of oil, meaning it's a binder because of the pectin. So, and Levkar, which is prune puree, would be, you know, another small an ingredient you could put in. Almond flour in a small amount might not change the taste, but it adds protein. So, you know, again, you can just experiment. I mean, that's really what waffles and pancakes and apple skivers and French toast all, you know, potato pancakes all lends itself to.
Thanks again, Grace. Sandy and Mequon, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I put shredded ham in my pancake batter. It gives that salty, then you put on the syrup, and it's a salty sweet, and it's just really delicious.
And getting back to lefse, some people make lefse as a dessert, but other people make it savory, where they're going to be putting in ham, you know, and roll it up. So, yes, why not, you know, and I'm sure someone's going to say that they put in bacon into their pancakes.
Oh, yeah.
So
I've done that. Sandy,
yeah.
Thank you.
Put strips across the pancakes and across the waffles as I bake them. And that works out well, too, but we love the shredded ham.
Yeah, sounds good.
That's a great idea. Thank you, Sandy. Appreciate the call. Grant emailed to say he's fermenting a potato sourdough rye bread. As he writes this note to us and has come to prefer using oven-roasted Yukon Gold potatoes that have been chopped finely after roasting. They're added to the dough, an excellent flavor, instead of using boiled or steamed potatoes.
Yep. We could go crazy with different kinds of potatoes and how you do them. I mean, I rice my potatoes when I put them into bread. Someone else is going to mash them. Someone else is going to possibly grate them. Yeah.
The latkes are something we didn't mention yet. They're made for Hanukkah. Are they any different from potato pancakes?
Well, in a sense, no, but there are so many different recipes. Like I say, somebody is going to use raw potatoes. Somebody else is going to use cooked potatoes or a mixture. How much oil do you put on your griddle? You know, how thick are they? Yeah. So it's a variety of potato pancake, you know.
There's a church near Watertown, a country church, where they have a potato pancake breakfast once a year with over 1,000 people. Eventually they serve that morning, and they use hundreds and hundreds of pounds of potatoes. And they do all the cooking. They make the potato pancakes outside in a tent. They're delicious.
Right, and remember, years and years ago, we did a show about lefse, and somebody called in saying, "Oh, you people use potatoes. You can make lefse without potatoes." and that was new to me. And then somebody called in and said, "Well, we in Norway, we don't care how thin they are." Whereas here, it's a big deal, you know. So the variety, the opinions out there, just, you know, all over the place.
Paul, you're going to be teaching a class at Madison College in January, aren't you?
On the 21st, it'll be a sourdough class, where I'll also deal with sour rye.
How do they find, so you can go to the Madison College website, yeah. I assume.
Right. So they should be out pretty now or pretty soon, but the catalogs would be out so people could register. Yeah, the 21st of January.
So you'll be showing how to make it and actually probably making some sourdough bread?
Yes. And then people can taste it. So, yeah, they get seduced by the smell. Yes. And then they can often some of them will take home a little bit of dough and then finish off one of the breads at home too. So,
well, here we are about out of time. I just have to say, yep. Bob likes bananas and peanut butter in his pancakes.
Right? Yeah, another whole other ingredient. Bananas are a thickener, so yeah, that'll change the texture. And again, play. Play with your food.
Do you ever have wine with your pancakes?
No, I do not.
Well, I'll tell you what, you may not have wine with your pancakes, but probably have wine with other things. Paul Novak, we're going to be talking about wines coming up next on the Ideas Network. Paul Novak, thank you so much for being
with us.
Larry. Yeah, we'll see you about Easter time.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Paul, a baking instructor at Madison College, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. And as he said, he's got a class on January 21st on sourdough breads. It's at Madison College. So you can go to the website, probably get signed up on their website. If it's not up already, it certainly soon will be. Coming up, though, we're going to switch from pancakes and lefse and so forth to wines and talk about wines for the holiday season. That next here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.